This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes, marking the 75th anniversary of the sinking of the USS Indianapolis by visiting with one of the only 8 men still living out of that crew of nearly 1,200. When we left off, I mentioned that the entire U.S. fleet observed 12 minutes of silence for the Indianapolis this week. The message from the Chief of Naval Operations included these words: "While much is written about the crew's 4 harrowing days in the waters of the Pacific waiting to be found with few lifeboats, overexposure to the elements, and almost no food or water, one thing is certain. Those brave sailors and Marines endured impossible hardships by banding together, and we must do the same today," Mike Gilday said in calling for 12 minutes of silence to commemorate those 12 minutes of chaos 75 years ago. The Chief of Naval Operations added, "Remember their courage and devotion to each other in the face of the most severe adversity. Remember their valor in combat and the role they played in ending the most devastating war in history. Honor their memory and draw strength from their legacy." And there is strength we can draw from their legacy. 93-year-old Harold Bray has spent his life honoring the memory of his shipmates. Why don't you take some time this week and follow Harold and the 7 other remaining survivors from the Indianapolis in their virtual reunion at ussindianapolis.com. You'll get the scoop on the latest development, the presentation of the Congressional Gold Medal, unveiled by the U.S. Mint on the morning of July 30th, 2020, for the 75th anniversary. But let's hear now about the first 15 minutes of July 30th, 1945, as Harold Bray experienced it. Harold, I know you hadn't been on the ship all that long, but you had gotten used to your sleeping arrangements, and you always slept on the third deck down, right?
Well, it was called hot bunk. You know, when you got out, another guy got in.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 1,100 or 1,200 guys on that boat. It was a little overkill because, well, during the war, you just were there to replace somebody that got hit or something.
Typically, you would sleep below deck, but because it was so hot, they told you you can sleep topside?
Yeah, that's where I slept on number 2 turret. I took a sleeping bag and a pillow, and I put it on top of the turret. And I remember it right. I took my shoes off. I had my clothes on, and when about midnight, a little after midnight, we got hit. And when the torpedoes hit right on the opposite side of the ship of me, and it rolled me off of that, I was like a 10-foot drop.
Mm-hmm.
And I seen my shoes go over the side, and I was dressed with dungarees on, and I was sleeping on the open like that. And I got down on the quarter deck, and it was just amazing. It seemed like we carried like 87 Marines. It seemed like they were all right there on the quarter deck when I got down there. And they started to bail off. We were still on our way. I never got in the water till she was on her side. I was forward of the quarter deck. I got down on the quarter deck, and guys were going nuts. They were running all over the place. Some guys were hit. Some guys were bleeding. Some guys... I stopped at the quarterdeck just to get my bearings, and my shop was at the Fantail. I was a ship fitter. So I made my way back to, I went through the hangar deck, and I grabbed some kind of tools, and I headed back to the Fantail. On the way back, I grabbed a life jacket. The guy was throwing them out of a pocket, and I got back to the Fantail, and there were 3 guys laying up against the bulkhead. One guy was bleeding pretty bad, and I gave him my life jacket. I helped him up to the lifeline. I made sure that he jumped off right forward of the propellers. We got him over the side where we were on the Fantail, so she was laying on her side in the water. I went back and got another one, and all that time, she was keeling over. And by the time I got back to the Fantail, she was on her side. And instead of floating off, I climbed over the rail and ran down the side of the ship to the quarter deck instead of floating off. I was going to stay dry as long as I could. When I went over the rail, I had to run forward to get away from the shafts. Screws were still turning. So I ran to the quarter deck And that's where most of the guys are piling off there. They're all gathered there, but she was going down fast. And so I got in the water. And when I hit the water, somebody hit me, drove me down. I opened my eyes up in the water. I could see the guys, the lights. And, of course, stupid me opened my eyes in the salt water. That was not the thing to do. But I hit the surface. And when I come to the surface, I looked back, and she was up on her bow. She was halfway sunk already. Mm-hmm. And the guys were still coming off. And I swam away from her. I was kind of pulled. And I swam away from her and got on a raft. One guy was on, we had a raft. So we picked up, I think we picked up 80 guys that night. And then, of course, we had a crash net, and we tied it to the raft. And so the guys would hang on to something. And, of course, as the days go on, the guys got sick or died from wounds they had. And I came through it pretty good. I got my whole side was burned on my left side. But other than that, it was okay. But the guys were hurt pretty bad.
A couple of things I want to ask you about there. One, do I understand correctly that was the very first night you were sleeping topside?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, my deck was three decks down, next to sick bay. My bunk was here. There was a stack of three bunks, and I was on the top bunk. The sick bay was right there. So.
And isn't that about where the torpedo hit?
Yeah, it did. Yeah, it hit right, blew sick bay out of there.
If this were the night before,
yeah,
when you were sleeping down there, or if you hadn't decided to go topside that night, you wouldn't have made it out of there.
No, I don't know why. Because it's so hot.
Yeah.
And decided to sleep up on top of a steel deck rather than my bunk. That was kind of stupid, but it saved my life. If I was in my bunk area, I would have been killed right there. I would never made it out.
And another thing I read about your experience, I think it might have been in Sarah Vladek and Lynn Vincent's book when they talk about your story, that before you abandoned ship, that I think it was Frenchie said to you, the ship's going down, and you couldn't believe it.
Yeah, Frenchie told me, you better get going, Bray. She's going down. I said, where's it going to go? Where's it going to go?
You had never considered that possibility.
Yeah.
That this beautiful ship could sink.
And at that point, we didn't know how bad she was hit, but she had taken two torpedoes, midship, one forward, and one midship. But she was still upright, but then the water came and started listing right away. When I went in the water, she was on her side. Of course, when I hit the water, somebody drove me down about 30, 40 feet. It seemed like I was never going to get back up there.
Well, and when you did, I think you found it wasn't all just water, right? There's a lot of oil in the water?
Oh, yeah. Well, it was about like 4 inches. Well, I had oil in my eyes, my ears, everything. It was a ruptured oil tank or something when we got hit.
I'm just trying to imagine what goes through the mind of an 18-year-old who is woken up by a torpedo hitting his ship, who falls to the next deck, whose shoes go overboard, who then he's going overboard, and now you're in the water in the dark, not knowing what's going on. What in the world were you thinking?
I don't know. I thought the Navy did that to everybody.
You and hundreds of other sailors aboard the Indianapolis are watching that ship go down, and you're in the water. Looking back now, you know what you went through over the 4 or 5 days that followed. But at that point, as you grab onto this raft and other guys are coming alongside, did you guys think you were going to be rescued? Was there any talk of what's going to happen next?
No, we didn't. Of course, we're by ourselves with no escort. We wondered about that, but they said, well, your ship was so fast it didn't need an escort. We were the fastest ship in the fleet at the time. But that was kind of ridiculous even. Most every ship had a destroyer with them, and we were by ourselves. And that was a big mistake, hindsight, you know.
And I'm guessing that you all would assume the ship was able to send out an SOS, a distress call.
Well, it would have, but CIC was hit, and it was just shut everything down. We didn't even get an abandoned ship.
But you guys in the water don't know that.
No.
So the reality is you've sunk, and no one in the Navy knows about it.
No. We're by ourselves.
And this would be just the first night, really just the morning, till the sun came up. Did that feel like it was days or weeks or years? I mean, how what did that feel like as a teenager going through that?
I don't know. I thought Navy did that to everybody.
Breaking you in.
Yeah. I don't know what my thoughts were. I know it was kind of I don't remember even getting scared when we got hit. It seemed like I knew what to do, but nobody ever told me what to do.
And you're injured. You're burned?
Yeah. My whole left side was, my clothes were gone. I didn't blister much. My arm was blistered, my left, but it was all on my left side. But that salt water didn't do it any good.
So how much pain were you in?
But it burns, you know, until it scabbed over and it was a couple of days. And the salt water was no fun to be in with open sores.
Well, especially when there are sharks in the vicinity, too.
Yeah.
And I just want everybody to understand the situation. So you're burned. You're covered in oil. You have no food, no water?
No, no. Well, the oil kind of protected you from the sun because we were oil from head to toe. And eyes and mouth, tongue, still taste it to this day.
Oof.
It was, you didn't have enough sense to close your mouth when you hit the water. I drank about a half a quart of oil, I think. But then you start throwing up, and after that's over, you're okay. But being just out of boot camp, you know, didn't expect anything like that.
And you mentioned, you know, more time that goes by, more guys latch on to this raft with the net attached,
right, yeah.
Floating there. Did you guys talk to each other much?
I don't remember what we talked about, but he didn't know anybody. I went on board with 10 other guys, and they weren't in that group I was in. We got split up in the water, three groups, and we were the biggest group, I guess. I don't know how many guys, we ended up with 80 guys in our, but when we got picked up, there was 18 of us 5 days later.
Well, and the tragic reality of the Indianapolis is that even though 900 of the almost 1,200 survived the sinking, by the time you're picked up almost 5 days later, there's only 316 of you still alive.
Yeah.
So we know that over those days, there are a lot of things that were happening to claim these lives. What was your first awareness that sharks were in the area?
Well, the guys were getting hit. The guys that were bleeding, sharks were taking them first. But you weren't exempted. If you're on the outer edge of this group, we counted off the first morning, we were 80 of us. And then with this group, we had a crash net, you know what a floater net is?
Yeah.
We had one of those and a raft. We tied it together. They had something to hang on to because even with a Pecaut life jacket, it was only good for so many hours, you know.
I think it was like 3 days, right? 72 hours or something?
Something like that.
Yeah.
And you had to have somebody or something to hang on to because we were in the water for over 100 hours. So I don't know what kept me alive, but I came through it pretty good shot, except for the burns. That was okay. There were flash burns. There weren't deep burns.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of guys are a lot worse than me.
So you're 18 years old. You're burned. You're covered in oil. No food, no water. And now you're seeing other guys eaten by sharks right in front of your eyes.
Oh, yeah.
And the sharks had to come close to you, too.
Oh, so I got hit a couple times. One got bumped in the rib cage. I thought he had me that time. But the face is so pointed. He just bumped me to see if I was still alive or something. And swam off. But that was the closest it came. That was pretty scary because guys were getting hit all the time. If you're any kind of wound, and you're bleeding, you're just shark bait as well.
Well, and sharks weren't the only reason that guys died. Can you give us some other examples of what you saw happening that prevented some of those other sailors from surviving?
Well, the burns, some guys were really burned pretty bad. And then, of course, drinking that salt water, you go crazy. And they never taught us anything in boot camp about that, you know. Of course, I was out of boot camp a couple of months before I got on a ship. They never talked about, because she just got back from the war zone, and she just repaired. She was taken pretty hard at Okinawa. She took a couple good hits there. That's when I got on her, when she got back from there. Then we went right back out there and got hit again.
So some of the guys around you, even on your raft, because you had no fresh water,
no,
and you're getting pounded by the sun while it's up, some guys resorted to drinking that salt water.
Oh, yeah.
And then they'd have hallucinations and maybe just go under or swim to some vision.
A lot of the guys just attack other guys, you know, they went crazy. And I just had enough sense to stay away from them. I don't know what made me do this, but I stayed by myself most of the time. Matter of fact, I swam away from the group and got a raft by myself for one day. And then I start picking up survivors, and they were just hanging on to each other.
As I just imagine, and it's really impossible for us to imagine going through this, because except for you guys, no one's gone through something this insane.
Yeah.
But I would imagine that initially, the first night, the first couple days maybe even, there's a fair amount of hope that someone's going to find you guys?
Yeah, everybody, I don't know if we had any radio guys in our group or not, but they got a radio message off, but never was one, I don't think. We had airplanes go over every day, and they were way too high. The last day in the water, I was looking to the horizon and seeing this airplane just come, like it just came up like this out of the horizon and came right at us. And it wasn't looking for us. Flew right over us, and then we was screaming and splashing in the water, and they saw us, give us the wing thing. And he came back and did it again, and I seen him go straight up, and that's when he radioed what he had. And, of course, it was another day and a half before we got rescued, but we knew somebody knew where we were. But other than that, nobody knew where we got hit. Then they took us off the board in the Philippines, thinking they were already in there. We're supposed to report in, but I guess somebody messed up and took us off the board and didn't know where we were. Just a stroke of luck that we ever discovered.
And while we're talking about that moment, so I believe that was Chuck Gwynn, right, the pilot?
Yeah.
That saw you and tilted his wings at you. And I'm pretty sure that years later at reunions, you got to meet him and shake his hand.
Oh, yeah, he came to the reunion. Him and his whole crew were there. First couple of years, of course, they were older, and they died pretty early. But he lived in San Jose, and his wife's still there, right? He died a few years ago, but he used to come up in my house. He was here a lot of times, but he just seen us by accident. He wasn't even looking for us.
What did you say to him the first time you got to meet him?
I think I kissed him. I don't know. I don't know.
Is there any doubt in your mind whether or not you'd be alive if he didn't see you?
Because we were in the water 4 days already. Nobody saw us. If they did, they ignored us. I don't know. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there was, when we first hit the water, there was like 1,100 of us in the water. If you were hurt, you weren't lasting, but it just died off. Every day we were burying guys, and it was not a good sight to even think about, you know. It was quite an experience.
It's break time again, but we're not done with USS Indianapolis survivor Harold Bray. When we come back, what it felt like to finally be rescued. We'll also touch on some of the developments the story has taken over the 75 years that followed. You may recall that in 2017, the wreckage of the Indianapolis was discovered by the crew of RV Petrol, funded by the late Microsoft co-founder Paul Allen. There are books, movies, so many resources to learn more about this incredible story, thanks to Harold and the other survivors who have had the courage to share their stories. For the most thorough and up-to-date encapsulation, I highly recommend the New York Times bestseller Indianapolis by Sarah Vladek and Lynn Vincent. Sarah spent over a decade interviewing survivors and produced an outstanding documentary on the topic before collaborating on the book. She's also been very instrumental in the virtual reunion for this 75th anniversary, and you can link to all of that if you head over to hometownheroesradio.com. We'll be right back after this.